If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo. Oh, no. Amateur Traveler, episode 759. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about churches and cable cars, dachas and monasteries, beaches, and lots and lots and lots of cheese, as we go to the Western Republic of Georgia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about the Republic of Georgia. I'd like to welcome the show Emily Lush from wander-lush.org. And Emily has come to talk to us about Western Georgia, and I mean the Republic of Georgia. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here.
So first of all, what's your connection with Georgia?
Right. So I am not Georgian. I am Australian. And Australia is about as far as you can get from Georgia, I think. A couple of years ago, I, like many people, I didn't know anything about this tiny country. I probably couldn't have put it on a map. One day I was listening to a podcast and I heard a cyclist who had cycled around the world. They said that Georgia was their favorite country. And I thought, maybe I should go check it out. Didn't know anything about it. I spent 3 months here traveling and have made trips back since then. And then last year, like many people, this happens a lot, but a lot of people sort of fall in love with Georgia and end up either staying or returning. You don't really just visit just once. So if you're planning a trip, you're going to be back. Last year, I decided to move here. So I arrived in February 2020 and have been here for about 14 months. And I love living here, living in Tbilisi, living in Batumi. I've kind of been between both cities, which are the two largest cities in Georgia, researching, writing for my blog, writing some freelance travel stuff, and just learning as much about the country as I can. I just love it.
Excellent. Well, and since you were able to find it, can you put it on a map for us?
Sure. So there's a little bit of land between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of the place in the world where East and West, Asia and Europe come to meet. And it's a bit of a cliche, but it's true. When you see a map, you'll see what I mean. So we have Turkey to the south, also Armenia and Azerbaijan. And then those three countries make up the South Caucasus area with Georgia. And then to the north of Georgia, you have Russia. And the sort of natural land bridge there is the Caucasus Mountains, which is kind of the thing that a lot of people associate with Georgia, is those mountains.
Excellent. Yeah, I think in Amateur Traveler, we actually have it listed in Asia and in Europe. It's one of those places that is culturally more European, but right next to Azerbaijan and Turkey and not that far from Iran and places like that as well. Excellent. Why should we go to Georgia? And specifically, why should we go to Western Georgia, which we're going to talk about today?
Yes. So the reasons you should go to Western Georgia are very much why you should go to Georgia as a whole. Like for me, the west of the country is just everything that's good about Georgia parceled up into quite a sizable area, but a very like convenient kind of route that you can plan. So I think Georgia as a whole is still a little bit off the beaten track in terms of being an international travel destination. And if you think of it that way, then the West is kind of even more off the beaten track because a lot of people end up focusing on Tbilisi, which is the capital city, and the East of Georgia, which is most well known for being the wine region. So wine is like a huge reason people come here. So they end up sticking more to the east of the country, which is also very interesting. I personally love the West because it's a total contrast. Throughout history, at times there's been a bit of a division between east and west. No longer. Georgia is a united country now, but in the past there was a bit of a division. So you get a really nice contrast between east and west. And if you're coming to Georgia and you have time to do both sides, quote, of the country, then you'll start to appreciate those contrasts in the culture, in the language, but most notably in the landscape. And that's one of the things I love about the West is that it's a totally different climate and geography to what you get in the East. So as I said, Western Georgia is just kind of everything that's good about Georgia packaged up into a region. And there are seven sort of regions that form the West. And within that, you have these very distinct sort of cultural pockets. And I'll talk about some of those today. In my personal opinion, the West has the most interesting cultures, the best food. There are some alternative wine regions that you can visit in this part of Georgia.
Okay.
There's a tea route as well, which is kind of a new thing that's developing now, but that's very interesting. If you like your Soviet throwbacks and nostalgia, then you'll really like the West because there's lots of beautiful mosaics that date back to the Soviet period. Lots of cool architecture, brutalist and crumbling buildings that are a lot of fun to explore and photograph. So there's that. You also have, of course, the mountains. Because the Caucasus Mountains run across the top of the country, so that unites both sides of Georgia. That's kind of the backdrop that you get everywhere. No matter where you are, you can see those mountains. So you have two really nice mountain regions in the west. One is very popular, one's a bit more off the beaten track, which I'll talk about. And then, of course, you have the Black Sea. So a lot of people are drawn to the beaches, the sun and the surf. Probably not the nicest beaches in the region, especially around Batumi, but you can find some really nice swimming beaches to the north, which I'll cover as well. So basically, you can do mountains to beach in the space of 2 days. You can get a huge variety of landscapes in a short period of time, and it's really easy to travel around as well.
Excellent. Well, you mentioned being able to do it in a short period of time. So just to put on a scale here, Georgia is about the same size as Ireland, slightly smaller than South Carolina, slightly larger than West Virginia, just to give people an idea of what kind of region we're talking about. And we're kind of cutting that in half or thirds and covering the western third or so.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Right. So a week in Western Georgia is actually a nice amount of time. I find a lot of people do like 2 weeks here and they'll kind of split their time between the East and the West. Mm-hmm. For this, yeah, I want to focus on the West because there are a lot of little nice places you can discover. The most obvious place to start would be Kutaisi, which is Georgia's second city. It's in the west, firmly in the west, and it's very different to Tbilisi. It's a lot smaller. There's not as many sort of big name attractions, but it's a really beautiful city. It also has an international airport, which makes it very appealing to especially budget travelers or anyone who's coming in on Ryanair, Wizz Air. They both end up in Kutaisi.
Okay.
So a lot of people do fly into that airport. The problem is that many people fly in and then they get straight on a bus and head east to Tbilisi. And please don't do that. Please spend at least a day in Kutaisi. Go through the city, have a walk around because it's a really beautiful place. Let me suggest a couple of things for you to do in Kutaisi. So the first one is Definitely Galati. And this is one of Georgia's three UNESCO World Heritage Sites. It's located just outside Kutaisi, just north. Mm-hmm. And it's a really important monastery and academy. It was founded in 1106. It has a religious significance, but more than that, it was a really important center of science and culture. So this is where a lot of scholars came to study. This is where they translated Plato and other works of that ilk into Georgian language. It kind of became a real cultural center in the West. It's such an important site. It's been UNESCO listed since 1994. You can do just an easy walk around. It's good to go with a guide. There's not a whole lot of signposted information from memory. Mm-hmm. But above all that, it's also a really beautiful monastery. They're kind of continuing the reconstruction, a really nice spot, kind of far enough from Kutaisi that you're sort of in the forest almost of Imereti, which is the region that Kutaisi is the biggest city of. Really nice spot.
Okay.
Nearby, you have another monastery called Motsumeta, and that's very close to Galati, a couple of kilometers. So you can either drive or you can walk between those two monasteries through the forest, which is really nice as well.
Oh, so that nearby. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say it's a couple of kilometers, but I'm guessing it's all downhill because you kind of head up to Galati, then you come back down a little bit to Motsumeta. So you can walk. There's sort of also a botanical garden in that area. So it's very beautiful. That would probably take you the best part of a morning if you were to do that in the morning. The third sort of important religious monument in Kutaisi is Bagrati Cathedral. And this is in a different part of the city. It's a little bit closer to the center of Kutaisi, mm-hmm. but it's also sort of a must visit. I actually recommend you do this one last. So skipping ahead a little bit to the evening, this would be a really nice way to spend your first evening. And the reason is that sunset here is really quite magical. Once you've seen the interior of the church, which is a very lofty stone building sort of set on a raised hill plateau kind of thing above the city. Mm-hmm. You walk around to the back and there's a huge churchyard and you can just see right over Kutaisi City. And something strange happens in the air. I think it's dust or something. And it, as the sun sets, it's just this known thing that the sky is painted all different colors. It's very beautiful. So that's a really nice place to end your day. In between, though, there's a lot to see in Kutaisi. It's a small city. It's very walkable. It's very green. There's lots of parks, and you have the Rioni River, which is the main river in this western part of Georgia. It runs sort of straight through the middle of the city, so you can walk along there. There's lots of cool bridges, and there's a old Soviet-era cable car that you can take over the river, which is quite cool. You also have a really great covered market where you can sort of get an introduction to Georgian produce, which is wonderful and nice to see before you sit down to a meal. You can see kind of the raw ingredients that go into Georgian food, which we'll be talking about a lot today, I think. Kutaisi has a really nice synagogue as well. And the other landmark is the Colchis Fountain. So this is kind of this beautiful glimmering water feature in the center of the city. And the fountain is decorated with these enlarged versions of these beautiful gold artifacts and pieces of jewelry that were uncovered in archaeological digs around this part of Western Georgia. So Western Georgia was part of the kingdom of Colchis, mm-hmm. which is tied to Greek mythology and all these wonderful stories about Jason and the Argonauts and the Golden Fleece and Medea. That all kind of takes place in Western Georgia. So there's those ties to Hellenistic and Greek mythology and Roman history that go back, you know, a lot more about this than I do, but that kind of still permeates this part of Georgia, which is another thing that sets it apart from the east of the country.
Yeah, so this city basically is one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities in the world, going back to the 5th and 6th century to the Colchis kingdom, as you were saying, yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's remarkable.
Cool. Where else?
So Kutaisi, I would recommend a day. A day is a good amount of time for Kutaisi, mm-hmm. depending on sort of when you're getting in. You do want a full day. If you have some extra time, you can take a day trip outside of the city. So there are two areas that have become quite popular in recent years, and I highly recommend them both. And these are kind of a bit more offbeat. These are for your photographers or someone who likes to explore kind of abandoned buildings and stuff like that. This is quite popular in Western Georgia. So the first one is called Skaltubo. And Skaltubo was in the Soviet era, and probably before that even, it was a really popular place to spend your summer holidays, have access to mineral water. So Georgia, all across the country, is known for its mineral springs and these like natural healing waters that have all these different properties that can cure anything and everything. So Skaltubo was kind of the biggest and the most coveted spa town in Soviet times. So there was a period where there were direct trains from Moscow coming to Skaltubo, and Stalin famously had a private bath in Skaltubo, and you can go and see that today.
Stalin, who was from Georgia.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. So he came home to enjoy his private bath every now and then. Apparently he only used it once or twice, but this is Stalin's bath that you can see. But the main reason for going up to Skaltubo, it's only 20 minutes from Kutaisi, and it's partially abandoned, but it's still very popular as a place to go and stay in a resort for your summer break and go to the mineral spas or have a spa treatment or something like this. But you can go up there and look at the old sanatoriums that go back to Soviet times. A lot of them, most of them were abandoned sort of in the 90s and kind of fell into disrepair. Some of them are now occupied by people who were relocated from Abkhazia. Some of them are just empty and have been like stripped of all anything of value. And they're just kind of these beautiful shells of once grand buildings. And you kind of get this amazing feeling of what they must have been like. And you can see the marble veneer on the columns, how it's just been hacked away with a little hammer or something. And it's quite poignant, really stunning building. If you're into photography, there's no better place to go and kind of explore. You have to be a little bit respectful of people's privacy when you're in that area. But for the most part, people are super friendly and you can kind of wander around as you please. Just don't break into any private property or anything like that, because some of them have been bought and are being developed. But that's kind of the thing to do in Skaltubo, and it's a really nice little, even a half day excursion from Kutaisi.
Well, and you mentioned Abkhazia, which I don't know that we're going to talk about so much in terms of going to Abkhazia in this, but that's either the westernmost region of Georgia or the former westernmost region of Georgia, depending on who you ask. So it's a breakaway portion of Georgia from the war in 1992.
Yes, correct. So I personally haven't been there, and I won't be taking you there as part of this itinerary. I'll be taking you right to the edge.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a personal choice. You can go there under normal circumstances. It's possible to visit if you have the right paperwork in place. And from what I hear, it's quite a very interesting spot.
Excellent. Where else are we going to go?
I just briefly mentioned another side trip from Kutaisi, which is a town or a city called Chiatura. Chiatura is of the same ilk in that it's kind of got this Soviet connection. So in the Soviet times, it was a very flourishing mining town. And the thing that this place is known for is its cable cars. So some people call them Stalin's ropeways. Apparently, Stalin singled out Chiatura as a place he wanted to develop. And so because the town is set in a valley and there are these manganese mines sort of in the hills around the town, they ended up erecting this very extravagant system of cable cars. I believe there were 17 at one point. You can just imagine them crisscrossing the river valley, quite impressive. And a lot of them are still functioning today. I rode in one in 2017. They're currently closed for maintenance, but I think they will reopen because even then people are still using them to get around just because the streets are too steep to walk up with all your grocery bags. They're still very much a part of the way of life in Chiatura. Even when the cable cars aren't running, there are other really interesting things to see. You have some really cool architecture in the station buildings. You can see, if you're into this sort of thing, you can see the hammer and sickle insignia above some of the buildings. It's kind of very retro and a bit like a time warp to walk into that city. And because it's a little bit remote, people are very inquisitive about tourists visiting, and it's always fun to walk down the main street in Teotihuacan.
It's funny when you say cable cars or gondolas, as these are, I picture something sleek and new, like out of Switzerland or something like that. This still looks, from the pictures I'm seeing, very Soviet, very functional. I see that Atlas Obscura describes them as Stalin-era industrial death traps.
Yeah, that sounds about right. They're a little, it's a miracle that they were still running, to be honest. Very rusty cables, and yeah, it's an experience if you get to try it. Maybe they'll upgrade them. Maybe when they reopen, they'll be new. But I kind of hope not, because they're very retro. At the time, I calculated that these things that had been running were older than my parents by a couple of years. So it's quite incredible that they are still running. Just quickly, nearby Teotihuacan is another place called Katsky Column or Katsky Pillar. And that's another quite iconic monastery in that part of Georgia. And when you see a photo, you tend to recognize it. It's just a monastery sitting on top of a limestone pillar, and it kind of appears out of nowhere. There are certain marked viewpoints back where you can see the monastery on top of the pillar, just in a forest of trees, and it's incredible. The monk who lived in there, I believe he might have passed away recently, but he was up there living a solitary life with no visitors or no, he'd use a little pulley to get his groceries up the limestone pillar. Quite an incredible monastery. And that's very close to Teotihuacan, so you can combine those very easily.
Oddly enough, this week, I think in my travel trivia, I had a picture of this monastery, of this building here on this big pillar of stone. And it was, where is this? I had not heard of it. And to me, it looked like Meteora, Greece, where all the monasteries are built on top of these limestone pillars. And I did not know that this existed in Georgia until just earlier this week.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by ButcherBox. The best meals start with the best ingredients, and ButcherBox has high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. If you're looking for inspiration on what to do with a fine cut of meat, they provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. I think it's time for me personally to up my game on what I can do with a good steak. But email me and I'll send you my port wine reduction and blue cheese sauce recipe that is to die for. That'll go well with your first order. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life for your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/traveler, and use code TRAVELER to get free ground beef for life plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/traveler and code TRAVELER. And thanks to ButcherBox for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Oh, that's a coincidence. But yeah, it does have that Meteora look. The thing, though, is that it's just by itself, and it just kind of pops out of nowhere, and it's pretty amazing.
Interesting. Where to next?
Okay, so that about does you for Kutaisi. You can easily spend longer if you like cafe hopping and all that, but that's a good introduction, I think, to Kutaisi.
If we're cafe hopping, is there a particular cafe that you would recommend?
Oh, I wish you hadn't asked me that. There's a restaurant that I can highly recommend. Actually, there's two restaurants, and I suppose they're both. One of them is more like a cafe as well. One is called Palati, and that's this gorgeous little place, just a small restaurant, two levels, but they often have live piano music and someone on the violin in the evenings, and it's just very atmospheric. Kutaisi has this wonderful, like, almost like a vintagey atmosphere, old worldy charm to it. And that restaurant just encapsulates that perfectly. They serve Georgian food and local Imeretian food as well. The other one is called Toma's Wine Cellar, which is more of a restaurant, to be honest, but it's also very much worthwhile visiting. You have to make a booking. And this is like a great example of Georgian home cooking and hospitality. It's a little restaurant set in the cellar of a family home, and you kind of sit down at the table and mum will come and explain to you what's on the menu tonight, and the son will come and show you the wine, and you just kind of enjoy a home-cooked meal, like restaurant standard food, amazing food, but a really nice cozy atmosphere. And those are two places I love in Kutaisi.
And is she explaining that to us in English or in Georgian or
in English? Yeah, okay. In English. It's they're professional, they know what they're doing. So that's a nice introduction to Kutaisi. For the rest of this itinerary, Kutaisi is very walkable. You can easily get around on foot. For the rest of this itinerary, I'm going to recommend that you hire a car.
Okay.
And a year ago, I would have said, never drive in Georgia. I was very terrified of the roads here. The driving style is something. I've lived in Vietnam and Southeast Asia, and the driving style here just freaks me out. It's next level. Huh. People are like quite aggressive. There's not a lot of, I guess it's one of those organized chaos situations that just seems to work itself out. If you're a passenger, it can be very anxiety inducing to be in a mashruka van or in a taxi. Mm-hmm. In high-speed traffic. I actually found when I hired a car and drove myself, I drove around Western Georgia. That was the first place I wanted to drive. And I actually found that being behind the wheel myself and having control was actually a lot more relaxing. And especially in this part of the country, you'll just see so much more if you have a car. It's a great way to open up those smaller towns, and there's just these little places you want to stop on the roadside. The flexibility really makes it worth it. Options for hiring cars here. I'll just quickly mention there's a couple of websites where you can hire from a local agent rather than your Enterprise or your Hertz, which okay. Do get quite expensive here. I'm not sure why they're so expensive, but it's much more economical to go with a local agent, and they're going to be hiring out older cars. So okay. These cars are not in fantastic condition. They're not going to be vacuumed, but the price is much more reasonable. They're usually insured, so you don't have to pay for your comprehensive insurance. It's included. They don't need a deposit. There are lots of bonuses. One website I use is called My Rent-A-Car, and they cover this region, Georgia and Armenia especially. So that's a little tip. But look, I do, as long as you're really careful and you look out for other drivers, then driving is actually not as bad as you might think. If your trip from the airport to your hotel spooks you, just know that it's actually not that bad once you get on the road yourself, and check the road conditions, because some roads close in winter, some close in summer if there's a flood or a landslide or something. But as long as you're sticking to highways, which you would be for this itinerary, you'll be totally fine. The roads themselves are very good quality.
Okay.
So heading out from Kutaisi, you want to head to the mountains. So you actually have two options here. Western Georgia, as I mentioned, has two sort of main mountain regions. One is very well known, and that's Sphaneti. Sphaneti is like the premium hiking destination in Georgia. It's also where you'll find another UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is Upper Sphaneti. And that's a set of villages that are famous for their stone tower houses. So that's a beautiful part of the country, and that's in the far west before you get to Abkhazia. So that would be northwest of Kutaisi. It is like very developed, well established in a good way. There's lots of amenities for tourists. Mm-hmm. If you're after something a little bit more rugged and you have the car, then I highly recommend you go to Ratcha, which is kind of an alternative mountain region. It's hugely popular among locals, less popular among foreign tourists because it is a little bit trickier to get to. But if you have your car, you can easily drive up there from Kutaisi. It's a really nice drive. And you'll find it's just a little bit more authentic in a way. The landscape is different, but you still get that beautiful mountain feel. And there are some really nice guest houses, which I'll call out one in a moment. But as you drive up from Kutaisi, you want to make a stop at a place called Nikotsminda Cathedral. So Georgia, as you probably know, if you know anything about Georgia is that there's a lot of churches and monasteries. It's a very like Orthodox country. That's religion is a huge part of the history and the culture today. You're going to see a lot of churches, and they do all tend to blend into one eventually. But if you're going to pick a couple, Nikotsminda, if you're going through this area of Racha, I really recommend you stop here because it's lesser known in terms of visitors, but it's a tentative World UNESCO Heritage Site. It's really, really beautiful. It's known for its frescoes. They have multiple styles next to each other, which has some significance in the world of churches of Georgia. But more than that, like for the layperson, they're just really vivid. And you can imagine one of these huge churches just absolutely covered the interior with really vivid, beautiful, clear frescoes. Mm. And then the outside is all carved stone. It's just something really special about that cathedral. And I've seen a lot, and that one kind of stands out to me. So I do recommend you make a pit stop there, and it's right off the highway, so very easy to do. But your kind of main destination in Racha should be Oni, which is a sort of mid-sized town, kind of halfway between Upper Racha, which is the very mountainous area, and Lower Racha, where you're coming from, north of Kutaisi. So Oni is a really interesting place. It used to have a really large Jewish community back in the day. Most of those families have since left. But one of the things they gave to this town, and it's absolutely stunning, is their synagogue. And along with the synagogues in Kutaisi and Tbilisi, this was one of the biggest, the third biggest among the three biggest in Georgia. And it's stunning. Like, I didn't get to go inside. It wasn't the right day, unfortunately. But just from the exterior, it was built by these skilled craftspeople from Thessaloniki. The carvings are really cool. It's all been restored, beautiful domed roof. And I think the thing is just so out of place in this small mountain town that's pretty flat. There's low roof houses, and you come around a bend and you have this amazing backdrop of mountains, and suddenly this huge synagogue just appears in the middle of nowhere. And I love the story behind it, that tie back to the Jewish community, who's unfortunate that so many families left, but it's just a beautiful reminder of that part of Oni's history. So for me, it's worth going just to see this synagogue. I just think it's beautiful.
And it is a functioning synagogue still. It's built in 1895 and the oldest functioning synagogue in Georgia.
Ah, I didn't know it was the oldest. So there you go. Yes, I did meet one of the caretakers, and I tried to wiggle my way into the door, but it wasn't the right day for me. So I'll have to go back and to see the interior, because that looks very beautiful as well. But yeah, Oni is a really nice place to stay. It's just a really nice town to walk around. If you like that small town, interesting architecture, then that's definitely a must. You can drive a little bit higher. I should mention as well that if you want to take a four-wheel drive, you can. The price is usually about the same, so you may as well get the four-wheel drive. And that will come in handy if you want to go into Upper Racha, which is kind of the deeper mountains above Oni. So there's one place in particular called Shovi, which was another spa town, or like a place for respite and rest. And there you can see this really cool building, which is called Stalin's Dasha.
Okay.
And I feel bad for bringing up Stalin so many times, but these are the little tidbits. I think I heard that it's an urban legend that it's not actually his Dasha. It's just a bit of a nickname that people gave to this beautiful, I think it's 4 or 5 story wooden house that's completely gutted, completely ramshackled, but somehow still standing, and just a really cool piece of architecture that you can go and see up in Shovi.
Okay. One thing before we go on, I had said that the Oni synagogue was still in use. It is sort of, but only for probably a little while longer. So there was a large Jewish population in Georgia for thousands of years, 250,000, but most have emigrated, have left for predominantly Israel. And so now the number of people worshiping there is 16. So it is only barely in use.
Oh, yes. Well, good on them for keeping it alive. It's a beautiful building that deserves some TLC. And yeah. 16. Wow, there you go. So that's kind of, you can hike in Upper Racha. It's not like the best place for hiking, but there are trails if that's what you're after. Otherwise, I would go back to Lower Racha, where you have one of the better established small wine routes in Western Georgia. So Racha is known for one particular wine, very famous for a wine called Kvanchkara, which is absolutely probably my favorite. And that's probably quite controversial because it's like the sweetest berry-like red wine that you can get.
Okay.
It's just like treacly sweet red wine. So if you're not a huge wine person and you like sweet drinks, this is like a very good wine for you. And it's made with grapes. I believe it's two grapes that are grown in this particular appellation in Lower Racha. So there are small wineries that specialize in this type of wine, and you can go into a wine tasting. It goes very well with local specialty foods, including Rachan ham, which is probably the most famous food export from this part of Georgia, and it's a cured ham that comes from Racha. So yeah, that's another great thing to do. And I recommend you stay in Oni. There's a fantastic guest house called Guest House Gallery, and you sleep in this exquisite 200-year-old wooden house that the owner's grandfather built, and his father finished off the carpentry on the balconies, and it's just gorgeous. Mm. A really, really nice place to stay, and the family are terrific. So after Racha, you would start driving further west, and there's a really nice route that you can drive through. So the region is called Racha Lechkumi. Mm-hmm. So as you drive west, you enter the Lechkumi part of the region, and you almost drive in an arc through the mountains, and the landscape changes again. You have more limestone formations, and there's parts of the road where these cliffs kind of arc over the highway, and you feel like you're driving through a tunnel. It's really cool. There are a couple of like short hiking trails. Otherwise, you can just drive through, and the atmosphere is fantastic. But you can take a little detour and go to a little town called Lailashi. So Lailashi, it has some history with the Silk Road. I'm not completely sure on that because there's not a lot of documentation about it. It's one place I want to go back to and talk to some people and find out more about the town's history. But it kind of became really popular last summer because of this place called the Secret Pool.
Okay.
The Secret Pool. It's as good as it sounds. It's kind of like an infinity pool in the mountains. And I know that this pool has some special cultural significance to the community. And I wish I could say more about that, but I just don't have the information. All I know is that it's just this spectacular, it looks like a little small swimming pool, and it's fed by mineral springs that are coming straight out of the mountain. You can see the water flowing, cold, very cold, fresh water. And it's just set at this perfect spot, so you can stand in the corner and you have your reflection in the pool and you're looking out over the most amazing mountain landscape. You have to go up quite high to get to this spot, to get to Lailashi. It's just spectacular. It's like Georgia's infinity pool in the mountains, and it's very Instagrammable, and I wish I could say more about its significance to the community. I will try and find out this summer when I go back, but yeah, it's definitely worth a detour. A little bit of a rough road, but you should try and get up there if you have time.
Well, Emily, if you're interested in learning more, I did discover a great post that mentions it on this website called wanderlush.org that has more info about it.
I'll have to go back and reread it. It's been a while since I wrote that.
I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. So as you come down, so you've driven that beautiful arc through Lechkumi and Racha, then you come down into the lower part of Western Georgia, and the first region you hit is Semegrelo. And this is probably my favorite place in Georgia. It just feels so different. You can feel the humidity as soon as you enter this region. It just has a very different feel and a lot of history here. Like, it was part of the Kingdom of Colchis. It was independent later in history and a principality that had its own sort of ruling dynasty called the Dadianis, the Dadiani family. They're like the old royal family in this part of Georgia, and a lot of the history is tied back to this family. So Semegrelo has amazing food. As a region, it's quite distinct. As I mentioned, people have their own dialect and traditions and customs and just the most phenomenal cuisine. So I'll recommend a couple of restaurants that you should definitely try. The first one is called Diaroni. And Diaroni is in Zugdidi, which is the biggest city in Semegrelo.
I'm just picturing putting together the show notes for this episode, and some Googling will be involved in terms of trying to figure out how to spell Georgian names.
Oh, I'll send you my notes. That's will all that right. help?
I found most of them already, but...
Okay, good. Some people do end up going to Zugdidi because there's a night train between Tbilisi and Zugdidi, and a lot of people use this as the departure point to go into the mountains of Svaneti. But for me, Zugdidi is just a really cool small city. You should not just use it as a transit point. You should spend a day there and see what it's about, especially to eat, because Diaroni is like the restaurant in the city to try Maghrelian local food. And yeah, terrific. It's worth going just to eat at this restaurant.
And you say local food, what kind of food are we going to have at Diaroni?
Okay, at Diaroni, so you're definitely going to be having Maghrelian, which is the regional cuisine, and there are a couple of dishes. So the first one is called Karcho, and Karcho, you can find it all over Georgia, but this is kind of the birthplace of these dishes and the most authentic version and the most delicious version, if you ask me. So Karcho is a beef stew, and the sauce is made with ground walnuts. So it's kind of very soft beef, very rich sauce, fragrant and a little bit spicy. This part of Georgia is spicy food. So if you like spice, if you've been missing spice in the other parts of the country, then just come here and have especially ajika. Ajika is like the Maghrelian Abkhazian spice blend, peppers and chilies and all different aromats that go to make this paste or this rub that is used in a number of different dishes. And I believe it's a part of Karcho as well. So Karcho is this really nice stew. You should definitely order that. And it's served with something called elagi. So elagi is like a polenta or cornmeal, but it's equal parts cornmeal and equal parts cheese. So you end up with this stringy, sticky thing that you have to like, it's quite a process to get it out of the bowl and onto your plate, but it's delicious. It's delicious. So a lot of Georgian food is like very dairy heavy. And over in the West, that's particularly true. You have another dish called gebjalia, which is a cold starter that's very popular in this part of Georgia as well. And it's basically like textures of cheese. So you have like a softened cheese that's wrapped in a firmer cheese, almost like a pasta, but it's made of cheese as well. And then that's covered in a sauce that's also made with cheese and like cheese water. And then it's flavored with mint. So it's like really fresh and chilled and lovely in summer, or lovely with your ajika on the side as a little bit of a break from that spice.
So if I understand you correctly, it's cheese with cheese and cheese served
That's
with
correct.
Mint. Okay. Sounds great to me.
That's correct. So food is definitely a highlight, especially if you like cheese. The other thing to do in Zugdidi is to explore that connection with the Dadiani family. And the place to do that is at the Dadiani Palace. And this is one of the most distinctive buildings in Georgia because, a bit like the synagogue in Oni, it looks a little bit out of place. It's a very like European style palace, kind of just set in this gorgeous garden. And the old woods that were part of the property are the private garden for the palace, and now this beautiful public botanical garden that you can walk through. And the palace, I believe there are a couple of buildings that are part of the complex. Some have been renovated, but the main palace building is going to be renovated in the near future. At the moment, it houses a museum. So you can go inside. It's quite a small provincial museum. You can walk through probably 15 minutes. It's a little bit mothballed, to be honest, and hopefully they will improve it over time. But you have to go to see this one item that they have in their collection that is just a bit crazy, and that is a death mask of Napoleon Bonaparte.
Okay.
So, yes, it's one of four copies, apparently, that exist in the world, and one somehow ended up in this small town in Western Georgia. So there is a connection there between the Dadianis and the French royal family. So there was Napoleon's nephew married into the Dadiani family, and then he inherited the mask, and somehow the mask ended up in Zugdidi. So this is kind of the thing to go and see, and it's quite interesting. You walk up a staircase and there's not much else in the museum, and then suddenly there's a plinth with a glass box, and you see Napoleon Bonaparte's death mask, and yeah, it's interesting. The cool thing is that there are still descendants of that family living in the area. Mm-hmm. So they have a number of properties. There's actually one on Airbnb if you're interested in staying in their hunting lodge. You can book a night up there. But that, I find it fascinating, that connection with the French royal family, and manifests in various ways. I mean, it's history now, but the Dadiani family is very important historical figures in this part of Georgia. Another place I recommend you eat is a little place called Folk House. And the man who runs that, it's not even a restaurant. It's like his private house that he's transformed into a little kitchen, a museum for guests. It's pretty cool. But he was the personal chef for some members of the family, and so he speaks fluent French as well as Russian and Georgian and everything else. And he's absolutely fantastic. He's like a treasure trove of information about Maghrebian culture. He knows all the folk songs. He knows all the recipes. He'll cook you some traditional kacho or gabjalia while you sit and listen to folk music in his house. It's just a really special experience if you have a chance to go there. That's called Folk House. Zugdidi is quite small. I also recommend you go to the market there, mm-hmm. if only to see the ajika. I mentioned this is like a popular spice mix in this part of Georgia, and at the market you can see all its many varieties and colors and consistencies beautifully displayed, and buy some to take home. That's quite cool. After maybe a day in Zugdidi, you can head to the next region. So the next region I recommend for Western Georgia is called Guria. And Guria is the smallest region in Georgia in terms of size. It was similar to Samogrelo. It was a sovereign principality, mm-hmm. but it was ruled by a family called Gurielli family. So again, it's quite distinct in terms of culture, cuisine. People have their own dialect. There are some really interesting and unusual customs that happen in this part of Georgia, festivals and stuff like that. But the reason I recommend going to Guria is to visit the tea fields. So as it turns out, really interesting history here, because basically when Georgia was a protectorate of Russia, one of the Russian princes loved tea, and he had a pet project that he wanted to cultivate tea somewhere in the Russian Empire. And this little corner of Georgia, mainly Guria, but also a bit of Samogrelo, a bit of Ajara, which is the next region, was the perfect conditions for growing tea. And it was the only place where tea would thrive because the climate is humid and it just had the right conditions. So this Russian prince, he put a lot of money and time into cultivating tea in this part of Georgia. Hmm. He invited a tea expert from China who relocated to this part of Georgia. You can still go and see the house that they had built for him. And yeah, they dedicated a lot of time and effort to cultivating a tea industry in this part of the country. So it was successful. By the time Georgia became part of the USSR, this was the place for growing tea in the USSR, the biggest tea producer in the Soviet Union, which I had no idea until I went there. It's quite interesting. There were big tea factories where tea was processed. And even today, if you look at Google Maps, you can see a little place called Anasiuli, where you can see tea plantations, and they're marked on Google Maps. They're numbered 1 through 13, so very Soviet style. When you're on the ground, you can drive through these old tea plantations where it's kind of a mix of rows of tea and hazelnut trees, which is also another very popular crop in Guria. A lot of the tea fields, obviously, when the Soviet Union collapsed, most of the factories closed down, and a lot of the tea fields were just sort of abandoned. And as I'm told, some of this tea went wild and it kind of mixed with other plants and it went rogue. And with no one to tend to the bushes, it just kind of, it just had free reign. And now, apparently, this wild tea is very sought after. So you have small tea growers who are making quite a nice living off this artisanal wild tea that's left over from the Soviet period. Hmm. So that's very interesting as well. You also have small family plots that have little tea fields where they grow and process black and green tea. One of them that I really love is called Komli, and it's a little farm just outside the main city in Guria, which is called Ozegeti. So Komli is run by three generations of women who have this beautiful wooden house. It's been in the family for generations, and you can sleep in the house. They have guest facilities. They have a little tea field that you can go and do a little tour, pick some tea, and they'll do a tea tasting for you. And this is very, very good quality Georgian tea. Very, very cool. They're going to be part of a tea route. So while the East will have its very popular wine route, there's mm-hmm. going to be a tea route through the West. That's kind of in development now. But there are more and more people who are cultivating tea, which I think is pretty cool. Not many people associate Georgia with tea.
No, it doesn't seem warm enough, I guess, in my mental model of the world.
Yeah, it is quite warm there. I mean, it does get cold in winter. So, So what happens to the bushes in winter, but it's definitely warm enough in summer. Having been there in summer, I can assure you, it's very warm. Finally, in Guria, I would recommend you go to some of the higher villages. There's a place called Shroma, which is one of these small towns. And the reason to go kind of into these small towns is that you'll find some really amazing Soviet-era mosaics. Most of them are on bus stops. So as you're driving along the main road, you'll see them pop up, and you'll want to pull over all the time to photograph these bus stops. A lot of them are in disrepair or have been covered over with graffiti or posters or something like this, but a lot of them are quite well preserved. So yeah, if you like mosaics, that's a good place to drive around. Same with architecture. You can find some really cool old buildings in that part of Georgia. And I'll link you to a map. Some dedicated person has mapped a lot of these old mosaics, and it's a great resource. If you're interested in that kind of thing, you can use this map to navigate your way around.
Cool.
So that is Guria. By this point, you're going to be very close to the Black Sea. So your first point of call as you come down through the hills and you start to get your first glimpse of the Black Sea, there are two quite popular towns in Guria that are on the Black Sea. So Guria region has a little sliver of Black Sea coastline in the north, the northern part of the coast. Those two towns are called Shekvetili and Ureki. And these are really nice places to swim. If you want to swim, don't go to Batumi. Come to this northern part of the coast because the water is a lot cleaner. You get actual sand rather than rocks, which is always nice. And more than that, these are black sand beaches, so they look spectacular. The sand is high in iron ore, which gives them this beautiful shimmering black color. And it's slightly magnetic, so they do say there are healing properties in the sand. It's good for your cardiovascular system and other various things. So there's that as well. But yeah, it's just a nice, clean, very family-friendly place to spend some time. It's not overly developed. You can find some nice little hotels. Also, Shekvetili has a little pine forest just along the beach. So it's a little bit cooler, and it's just a really nice climate in that part of the coast.
Okay.
So I do recommend stopping there. I recommend stopping there before you start the final chapter of the journey, which is to go down the Black Sea coast towards Batumi. So on the way, there are a couple of places to stop. There are two fortresses. One is north of Batumi, one is south. They're called Petra and Gonio. And they are old Roman fortified cities that were part of the Kingdom of Colchis. And now they're sort of these open air museums that you can go and walk through. Gonio was big. It had an amphitheater that's no longer there. You can just sort of see the remains of walls and various things like that. Petra, I believe, has some mosaics that you can go and see. I haven't been into Petra because when I was there, they were reconstructing the fortress, and that's just reopened after some extensive renovations. So I'm interested to see what they've done with that. But both of these are on the coast, so you can easily stop in as you drive down. before you get to Batumi. So Batumi is the biggest city on the Black Sea coast of Georgia. It's the biggest city in Ajara region. Ajara region is sort of the southwest corner of Georgia. It has, like, bordering on Turkey, so it has a very distinct Ottoman influence, Turkish influence. It was part of the Ottoman Empire for a long time before it became part of Georgia. So here is a real, I think, a real contrast. You can definitely feel a different culture in this part of Georgia. It's an autonomous region, so they have their own system of government. They have their own dialect. Again, a really interesting food tradition. Batumi is kind of, it has a really bad reputation. So it's known as the Las Vegas of the Caucasus, which says it all, really.
Now, for some people, that's attractive. But
well, yes. There is gambling. There is a lot of sunbathing. There's definitely that side to Batumi. Yep. I think part of the label comes from the architecture as well, because Batumi has a lot of really strange buildings, like a tall tower with a miniature Ferris wheel kind of embedded in the side, and then you have a tower that is dedicated to the Georgian alphabet, and it's kind of this crazy spiral thing with letters of the alphabet stuck on the side, and it's an acquired taste, the Batumi skyline. But once you can get past that, and I was really lucky to spend 4 months in Batumi last year, and I really got to see a different side to the city, and it completely changed my mind, because I was one of the people who didn't really like it the first time I visited. But having spent some time there, it's a really interesting place. There's a lot to do outside of the beach, even though the city does revolve around the beach. Mm-hmm. The beach is nice. I mean, not the actual beach itself, but the boulevard that runs along the beach is really nice. That dates back to 1881. It's got a long history. It's like the heart of the city. And if you go out there at sunset time, it's just packed with people walking, and it has a really lovely atmosphere. But beyond the beach, there's a lot more to Batumi. You have that crazy architecture that, if you can find yourself a walking tour or a local guide who can explain where these buildings come from and the story behind them, it's actually quite interesting. Mm-hmm. You also have a really beautiful, small but quite beautiful old town in Batumi. Nothing like Tbilisi's, but it does have some nice architecture. And then you have some like really cool street art. You have some great cafes and food and just this creative scene that's kind of emerging in Batumi now, almost as a counter to that beach resort culture that's sort of dominated Batumi for a really long time. So you have those two sides to it that are really interesting to explore. You also have a cable car, and my absolute favorite thing in Batumi is the fish market. So this is a little market on the Black Sea where you go and the first step is you walk into this little market where they're displaying the day's catch, basically this array of beautifully colored fish and crustaceans and whatever. You choose whatever takes your fancy and hand it to someone. They'll descale it and prepare it for you. They'll throw it in a plastic bag, hand it to someone else, and then that person will go and grill it like fresh, super fresh seafood. Then you can sit out the back and just overlooking the Black Sea. It's a really nice experience.
Interesting.
The one more must-do in Batumi is definitely the Botanical Garden. So this was one of the biggest in the USSR, and it's been wonderfully maintained, like a really world-class botanical garden. So many different pockets of fauna and flora, but beyond that, it's just a really nice place to walk. They have a path, and then they have some more rugged hiking trails. Nothing too serious, but just really nice forested, shady walks that you can do through the botanical gardens. And this is just north of Batumi city, so you have that beautiful view of the Black Sea as well. And then just finally, in Batumi, you have to eat as much as possible, because again, this is another region of Georgia that has an amazing cuisine. And most famously, this is the home of Khachapuri Ajuruli. So Khachapuri is the cheese pie or the cheesy pizza or whatever it's called that is often associated with Georgian cooking. Mm-hmm. Khachapuri Ajuruli, which is the regional one, is probably the most famous. It's the one that's shaped like a boat, and it has the melted cheese and right. the egg yolk and the butter in the center. So that comes from this part of Georgia. There are two places that do a really good version. One is called Retro and one is called Laguna. And they both do a really lovely version of that dish. But beyond that, there's a whole world of delicious cuisine, most of them cheese-based. And I'll just mention my favorite dish, which is called Borano. Borano is basically melted cheese covered in melted butter. And it's delicious.
I could definitely get my wife to go to Georgia, I think, just by telling her the cheese dishes. So
good.
Well, this is rapidly going to become the longest episode of Amateur Traveler ever. So we it's great. I've been having fun. Definitely feel like this is someplace I want to go. But we probably need to start wrapping this up. Anything you want to make sure we talk about before I get to some of our wrap-up questions?
No, look, that was the end of my itinerary.
Excellent. You are standing in the prettiest spot in Western Georgia. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
So I have to be looking at the Black Sea.
Okay.
I'm Australian. I'm not a beach person despite that. But the Black Sea is just something about it. It's just gorgeous, especially when you come through that forest that leads down to the coast. Even if you're coming from eastern Georgia where you have that sort of dry, semi-desert landscape, once you see the Black Sea, it's just spectacular. So specifically, there is a spot inside the botanical garden that I mentioned where there's a really nice lookout and you just look at the Black Sea like this satin sheet, perfectly flat, but with little ripples that catch the sun. It's just gorgeous. And on a clear day, you can see the Caucasus Mountains as a backdrop to that, which is extremely spectacular. You can see all the way to like Sukhumi, Abkhazia, even to Sochi, Russia, I believe. So that's definitely what I'm looking at.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Western Georgia.
So in Georgia, people have a saying that a guest is a gift from God. And that sounds a bit naff, but believe me, people take this very seriously. So only in Georgia would you meet a middle-aged woman on the bus and then end up talking to her through her son or her niece, who happens to be an English teacher, mm-hmm. who she has on the other end of the phone. So you're using the phone to talk to them, then they're translating to her. Then before you know it, you're at her house drinking wine, eating food. And how did this happen? You just ended up in her home because people really are that generous and welcoming. You do need to exercise common sense, of course, especially if you're by yourself. But honestly, people are extremely kind-hearted. In the West, in the East, it doesn't matter where you are, but that is likely to happen to you. And as much interaction as you can have with local people as possible, do it. Like, you'll miss a little bit when you're driving. So I do recommend you stay at guest houses so that you can meet a local family and get to know people, because that's one of the highlights of traveling here for sure.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Western Georgia in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
Okay, so definitely cheese.
All right.
I'm going to go with cheese because that's such an important part of the food here. Also wine. Wine is very important all over Georgia. And the sea, the Black Sea. Even if you're not a beach person, it's just like a magnet and it's beautiful.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Emily Lush from wander-lush.org. And Emily, I've already stumbled across a couple of your posts, but if we wanted to send people to your best post about this region, where are we going to send them?
So a good starting point, because it's already on some people's itineraries, is Batumi. And I'm really proud of my Batumi city guide. It's called 35 Things to Do in Batumi Beyond the Beach. So there are lots of alternative things to do in there. And it's a good starting point for exploring the West for sure.
Excellent. I was already looking at it. So terrific. Emily, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for Western Georgia.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank the patrons of the show who help support the show and defray some of the costs that I had been paying for many years. And you too can be a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And special thanks to Robin Perry, who is the latest patron of the show. Robin said, "Been meaning to do this for a while. My favorite podcast." Thanks so much, Robin. And with that, this has been a longer episode, so we're going to skip community feedback and go right to the ending. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit and watch.